Tantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents Fiendish Delights by Helen Harper, narrated by Ruth Urquhart. Chapter 1.
It's one thing declaring to the world that you're a treasure hunter, but it's something else being one, especially when you possess few connections, little experience, and limited resources. Dogged determination and a LinkedIn profile were all well and good, but I was becoming the living embodiment of Catch-22. I couldn't get any decent treasure hunting commissions until I successfully found some treasure, and I couldn't successfully find any treasure until I had some commissions. That's not to say that I hadn't found work. It just wasn't the kind of work I'd envisaged when I'd started down this path a few months earlier.
"The tide will be coming in soon,"
Otis informed me, buzzing in my left ear. Hester flicked the lobe of my right ear.
"It's also starting to rain."
Her tone was disgruntled.
"And it's not the sort of refreshing rain that makes you glad to be alive. It's the sort of Scottish December rain that is grey and icy and seeps not only under your collar and into your bones, but also into your soul to make you wish you'd never been born."
"It's only rain," I muttered. I scuffed the sand at my feet, telling myself that I was having fun. I'd found a lot of broken shells, pretty sea glass and bits of rubbish, but I hadn't found Trish York's wedding ring.
"That's easy for you to say. Some of those raindrops are the size of my head," she complained.
I crouched down and turned over a seaweed-covered rock to check underneath it.
"You can stay in my pocket. You'll be dry there." "Dry," Hester argued, "but musty and smelly. When was the last time you washed this coat?"
Otis sighed.
"Stop being rude, Hess."
"I'm not being rude. I'm being truthful.
Are you trying to tell me that you don't think Daisy's pocket smells like the rotten intestines of a rat's corpse?"
He didn't answer his sister, suggesting that her description was wholly accurate. Instead, he addressed me.
"I don't think you're going to find Mrs. York's ring, Daisy. It's probably already been swallowed up by the sea. You've tried earth magic. You've tried a metal detector. You've walked up and down this beach 84 times. The ring is gone." "This isn't proper treasure hunting," Hester added. "It's lost and found. Where's the glory? Where's the fun? Where are the damned dragons?"
"Do you want to meet a dragon?" I asked.
"Anything would be better than this."
The only dragons left in the British Isles were in Wales. While I thought it would be beyond cool to meet one, I doubted Hester actually wanted to come face to face with a curmudgeonly beast with fangs the size of a Mini Cooper. Dragons were dangerous, and they usually stayed well out of sight. Hester was right about one thing, though. This wasn't treasure hunting. Not really. I pulled my bag off my shoulder, unzipped it, and rummaged inside. I didn't need to look at either brownie to know that their expressions would display disapproval, but they knew better than to say anything. I'd heard it all before, and it wouldn't make a difference. I located the small bag containing my supply of spider silk and plucked out a pill. Without hesitating, I tossed it into my mouth. It fizzed on my tongue, the familiar bitter taste making my lips pucker before I swallowed it whole. Immediately my skin tingled and my muscles tightened. I raised my chin and, ignoring the rain, made a last-ditch effort to find the stupid ring by sending out a blast of air magic towards the damp sand. My intention had been to blow away the top inch or so to reveal what lay underneath, but as I pushed the magic forth, I stumbled, losing both my footing and my grip on the spell. The resulting burst of wind slammed into the beach with a deafening crash, and I was thrown backwards by at least several metres, landing with a painful thud on my back. Oof! That had really hurt. I struggled up to a sitting position, blinking through the cold rain at the newly formed crater in front of me. Oops. That certainly wasn't what I'd intended.
"What the fuck was that about?"
Hester screeched, her tiny cheeks bright red.
"Look at what you did to Otis!"
I glanced around, and my eyes widened in alarm when I saw him. Shit. He was some distance away, having been turned upside down. The top half of his body was buried by sand, and only his legs were visible, kicking uselessly in the air. I scrambled towards him to pinch his feet and pull him free. He coughed and spluttered. His head, arms and torso were covered in soggy sand. I gently used the tip of my finger to brush it away, while Hester continued to admonish me.
You could have killed him!
Fine, Hess,
Otis coughed.
You could have suffocated!
Honestly, it's not a problem.
He rubbed his eyes and blinked, trying to smile. She didn't listen.
How could you lose control like that, Daisy? He might have died.
Guilt washed through me. She was right. It should never have happened. It had been years since I'd allowed my magic to get the better of me like that. I'm sorry, Otis, I whispered. I'm so sorry. He blinked again and shook away the last of the sand.
That's fine, honestly. Look,
he pointed at the sand crater.
Look at that.
I followed his finger. In the very centre of the hole, there was the glint of gold. I peered more closely. Yep, that was a ring. Triumph flooded me.
Well done, Daisy, Otis wheezed. You found it after all.
Hester scowled.
Big deal.
I pumped the air with my fist, strode towards the ring and scooped it up. It was a minor success, but I'd absolutely take it.
Come on,
I said, grinning widely at the brownies. Let's get out of here.
We're not going to get rich from jobs like this.
Hester was still intent on complaining when I finally arrived home with a very small reward from Trish York safely in my back pocket.
We've been through this, Hester. The financial reward wasn't why I took that job. Mrs. York was ridiculously happy to get her ring back, and if she leaves a review, it'll be more than worth the hours spent on Long Nidri Beach.
It was true. The more reviews and testimonials I garnered, the more chance I had of being hired for a real treasure hunt by someone with a lot of money behind them. Frankly, reviews were worth their weight in gold, no pun intended. One day, I hope to have enough resources and access to establish my own treasure hunts, but for now I was relying on the information and requests provided by other people. I couldn't afford to spend the better part of a year researching dusty archives for details of potential lost treasure. But in the future, anything was possible, and bottom rung of the ladder or not, I wouldn't allow myself to be anything other than optimistic about what lay ahead.
You should write to Sir Nigel again. He might give us some real work,
Hester instructed me. He's out of the country. I started to peel off my damp and, yes, smelly coat. I'd be finding grains of sand in my clothes for weeks, if not months, no matter how many times I washed them. Sand was sneaky like that.
You could approach Hugo,
I interrupted her. No.
But
no. Otis smiled nervously.
I think Hester's right. You could give him a call and see if...
No! He flinched. I drew in a deep breath. I'm sorry, that was harsher than I intended. We don't need help from the likes of Hugo Pemberville. We're freelance. We're not beholden to anyone else, and we're not going to be. The last thing I wanted was Hugo to know how much I was struggling in my new career. While I appreciated every single success, no matter how minor, I was certain he'd laugh at my meagre accomplishments. And for complex reasons I didn't fully understand and couldn't articulate, I didn't want him to see me as a failure. Besides, I hadn't spoken to him for weeks, and our paths might never cross again. We didn't exactly move in the same circles.
We can do this ourselves.
Otis nodded.
Yes, Daisy, of course we can. You're right.
Hester rolled her eyes.
No, Daisy, we can't. You're wrong.
I wet my lips. Come, bubbling bollocks. Perhaps I should listen to her. Okay, I conceded, prepared to compromise. I promise I won't take on any more small lost and found jobs for the time being. I've saved enough to tide us over for a few weeks, so we won't undertake any hunts unless both the reward and the treasure are substantial. I'll extend my advertising to the classifieds in at least one national newspaper, and I'll see who else I can contact at the British Museum for leads. I paused and eyed both brownies. Is that good enough? Otis looked relieved, while Hester blew out air loudly.
Finally! No more selling yourself short, Daisy. You're a skilled treasure hunter, should be searching for extraordinary items. From now on, we seek nothing less than a chest full of precious jewels and shiny gold, she said firmly.
Chance would be a fine thing. Fortunately, for the sake of my sanity and Hester's mood, There was a knock at the door, which prevented me suggesting there was a world of difference between optimism and fantasy. I kicked off my wet trainers, ignored the damp discomfort of my socks, ambled down the corridor, and opened the front door. Then I stared. Oh. While I hadn't been expecting anyone in particular, I certainly hadn't anticipated the caller being a child. In my experience, people under the age of 12 were strange and unpredictable, and it was wise to avoid them whenever possible. Hi. I tried not to stare too obviously at the girl. Her limpid brown eyes were astonishingly large, and she was swamped by the huge puffer jacket she was wearing. I glanced beyond her for any sign of a parent or guardian, but she appeared to be alone.
"Are you the hunter elf lady?" she asked with a faint audible wobble.
There was an odd prickle in the back of my neck. "Yes," I said cautiously. "Who are you?"
"Sophia."
I gazed at her, and she gazed at me. The silence stretched out for several seconds, while the prickle turned into an itch. "Do you need some help, Sophia?" I asked finally.
"I live down the street," she waved vaguely to the right. "I want to hire you. I have a job that needs doing."
She might be no more than 4 feet high, but she sounded like a mafia boss ordering a hit. I smiled. "How old are you?"
9.
"Do your parents know you're here?"
"There's only my dad. I know he doesn't know. He wouldn't like it. He thinks you're weird, and he told me to stay away from you."
She delivered the information in a matter-of-fact voice. "Your dad is right," I said cheerfully. I scratched the back of my neck with my nails. Did brownies get fleas? Was that why I felt so itchy? "I am weird, and you should stay away from me. Nice to meet you, though, Sophia." I started to close the door.
"Wait!"
I hesitated.
"I still want to hire you,"
she swallowed.
"I need to hire you. I need a treasure hunter."
"Oh, man. That's very kind of you, Sophia, but I'm afraid I'm busy." Although she was obviously nervous, her response was instant.
"No, you're not. You finished that job for Mrs. York, and I've seen your advert in the shop window down the street that says you'll hunt for any sort of treasure, so you can't be that busy."
Was this kid keeping tabs on me? I should have known that forking over a whole 20 quid to advertise my skills in the corner shop window would bite me in the arse sooner or later. She held out a crumpled £5 note.
"I can pay you."
"I can't take your money, Sophia." I tried to sound as gentle as possible. "You should go home to your dad and ask him for help." Her cheeks turned scarlet.
"Stop! Stop, Patrick!
"Patronising you?" Her jaw tightened.
"Yeah, that. I want to hire you to get my treasure back. You're a treasure hunter."
She glared.
"So hunt for my treasure."
"What treasure is it?"
"My doll."
Help. I scanned the street again. It was devoid of people.
A doll might not be treasure to you, but she's treasure to me. She's the last present my mum gave me before she died."
My stomach sank to my boots. Shit. "Where did you last see it?"
"In the cemetery at the end of the road."
She crossed her arms over her chest.
"I was visiting mum's grave, and I took Nancy with me."
She stressed the name, as if she were insulted by me calling her doll an it.
"Nancy's my doll. I put her down while I went to get some water for the flowers, and when I turned around, she'd gone. Somebody took her. I need to get her back, and you can help me."
I tried to think of a polite way to decline. It would have been easy if she were an adult. Sophia threw the balled up £5 note at my chest. Without thinking, I grabbed it before it tumbled to the ground, and her face immediately transformed into a bright grin.
"Brilliant. Thank you. I'm at number 72, flat 4. You can knock on the door when you've found Nancy. You'll know her when you find her. She has a pink heart sewn on her chest."
She twisted away and marched down the street, her hair swinging in the light breeze. Nuh-uh. No way. "Wait! Sophia!" She didn't turn around.
"I'll be home from school every day at 4 o'clock, she called. Don't come after six, or my dad will see you.
No sooner had the last word left her mouth than she started to run with a pelting speed that only professional sprinters, expert shapeshifters, and prepubescent kids could manage. I was left clutching the grubby fiver and staring after her with the definite sensation that I'd been completely conned by a child. I sighed, stepped back, closed the door, and headed for the kitchen where Otis and Hester were already making a mess.
So, I hedged, you remember what I said about only hunting for substantial treasure from now on?
A tiny frown creased Otis's brow.
It was only 2 minutes ago. Of course we remember.
You promised, Hester reminded me.
Not in so many words.
I grimaced.
Well, about that.
Chapter 2
Edinburgh is the sort of city where you can turn a corner and trip over an old cemetery. They're all over the place, often where you'd least expect them. Many no longer accept new burials or cremations and are filled with scattered headstones and graves that are hundreds of years old. Sockton Cemetery, not far from where I lived, was one of the less dramatic sites, but it still organised burials. It was a peaceful spot, occupied not only by the dead, but by any number of crows, magpies and scurrying mice, who mostly stayed out of sight. I'd walked past it 1,000 times, but I'd never passed through its gates until now.
"Where's the grave belonging to the child's mother?"
Hester inquired. I shrugged. "I don't know." Otis flew ahead.
"Was there anybody else nearby who might have taken her doll?"
"I don't know."
"Is there anything at all that you do know?"
Hester asked. I considered the question.
"The blob of toothpaste that sits on your toothbrush," I said slowly, "is called a nurdle."
"Ooh!" Otis said. "That's interesting."
Hester only stared at me. I grinned. "Come on," I said. "The graves to the right look more recent, so we'll start over there. Sophia's mother can't have been buried here for long." I turned, and with both brownies joining me, checked the inscription on each headstone as we passed.
"At least tell me that you know the child's last name," Hester demanded.
I didn't look at her. She hissed.
"Daisy?"
"She said the doll vanished when she went to get water for some flowers," I said helpfully. "Look for a grave with fresh flowers on it."
"This is ridiculous,"
Hester muttered. I turned my head. Although her words were familiar, her tone was different to usual. There was an angry tension to her voice that I'd rarely heard. Hester had made a sport out of complaining, especially in recent weeks, when I admit there had been a lot to complain about. But this sounded more serious than that. I watched her for a moment or two. Her tiny shoulders were stiff and her wings were vibrating more than necessary. Ah, she might use funereal black as a fashion choice, but I reckoned that Hester was feeling distinctly uncomfortable.
"What?"
she snapped.
"Why are you looking at me like that?"
"You're not a fan of cemeteries, are you?" she sniffed loudly.
"The dead creep me out."
"Do you want to wait by the entrance?"
"I'm not afraid."
She half yelled the words, suggesting that she was very much afraid. It was a sentiment that I could empathise with. While I found the cemetery a peaceful place, I knew what irrational fear felt like. I was much the same in small, dark spaces.
"Hester," I began. She shook her head violently.
"No, I'm staying. Let's find this damn doll and get out of here." "You're all right, Hess,"
Otis soothed.
"I know I'm all right."
Her voice dripped with the desperate rancour of the terrified. She jerked her head to the left.
"There's a grave over there with fresh flowers on it. Come on."
She took off, flying at high speed away from us. Otis winced and started to follow her. I bit my lip before doing the same. The headstone was plain, but there was something elegant about its simplicity. However, while the flowers, a collection of red roses, white lilies and some pretty fern-like foliage, were indeed freshly laid, this wasn't the grave of Sophia's mother. Not unless her mother had been an 82-year-old man called David. Hester's hands were curled into fists.
"Fuck!"
I opened my mouth to repeat that she could wait for us outside the cemetery walls, but before I could say a word, there was a guttural shout from my left, followed by the sound of pounding footsteps. Hester shrieked and flew behind the headstone.
Oi! Stop that! Stop desecrating the graves!
I dropped my hands to my sides to indicate that I was doing no such thing, as Otis zoomed in front to defend me. A burly man wearing a high-vis jacket and overalls appeared from behind a row of trees, marching in our direction, with his shoulders swinging and his jaw set. As soon as he saw us, he came to a stuttering halt, and his face slackened.
Oh, sorry. I thought you were somebody else.
I waved a hand airily. That's okay. I was just having a look around. I live nearby. He nodded, then stared at Otis.
Is that a brownie?
Good day,
Otis said. The man jumped. Hester raised her head from behind the curved edge of the stone.
Attack!
She screeched.
Attack him now, before it's too late!
It's fine, Hester, I said quickly. She drew in a breath. I gestured towards her to keep quiet before she started bellowing unnecessary insults or kill commands.
I've never seen a brownie in real life before,
the man whispered. Otis executed a perfect bow.
In that case, it's a real pleasure to make your acquaintance. I'm Otis. That's Daisy. And that's my sister Hester hiding behind the headstone.
I'm not hiding,
she yelled.
I'm well. Nice to meet you all.
He continued to switch his stare between Otis and Hester, shaking his head in wonder. I stifled a smile and eyed him curiously. So who did you think I was? Will pulled his gaze away from the brownies and a dark expression crossed his face.
There's been a witch lurking around here lately, taking things from graves, messing with the dirt. It's not right. It shouldn't be allowed.
Suddenly, I was very interested. A witch? A cemetery seemed a strange place for a witch to hang out in. Their skills tended towards adapting living material to their own purposes, usually leafy plants and herbs. A witch had no use for the dead. But a witch who was taking things from a graveyard sounded exactly like the doll-stealing culprit I was looking for.
Aye, a strange bloke with strange powers. I've got nothing against witches per se. I've used their services from time to time myself when I've needed to. But this particular witch is...
He paused to suck in air through his teeth.
Unnatural.
He swept his eyes up and down my petite frame.
You should steer clear of him if you see him.
Excellent. I smiled brightly. Do you know where I can find him?
Didn't you hear me?
His left eyebrow was starting to twitch violently.
He's clearly not right in the head. He'll do someone like you an injury.
Uh-huh. I knew what Will saw when he looked at me. A small, vulnerable female with messy red hair who couldn't fight her way out of a paper bag if her life depended on it. I didn't take offence. Like most people, he only took notice of the obvious. So I gave him obvious. I raised my hands and made a show of tucking my hair behind my ears to reveal my pointed elvish heritage. Then I glanced casually at Gladys, the slender, sentient short sword hooked onto my belt and half hidden by the tail of my coat. Will blinked and stepped backwards.
You're an elf.
I nodded. I didn't bother telling him that I was a low elf with fewer powers and ability than a high-born individual, or that I didn't actually possess any sword-wielding skills. He didn't need to know everything.
I didn't realise.
His eyes took on an eager light.
Can you do magic?
Yep. Before he asked for a demonstration, I took control of the conversation. So, this witch, where will I find him?
I don't know. He comes here on foot, so he can't live far away. I think his name is Mud McAlpine.
He shrugged awkwardly.
I only know because he talks about himself in the third person, and that's what he calls himself. It might not be his real name. He's a weird guy. I don't know where you'll find him, other than here.
Otis smiled.
Daisy is the best treasure hunter in the country. She'll find him.
Will's jaw dropped.
You're a treasure hunter.
It was nice to be admired, even if I didn't deserve it. I am. His awe increased.
Do you know Hugo Pemberville?
For fuck's sake. Yes, I said shortly.
He's amazing. I love him.
That was quite the declaration. Okay, I acknowledged, not quite sure what else to say.
I was telling my husband the other night how skilled he is.
Uh-huh.
The amount of lost treasure he's found is astounding.
I guess.
Did you know that he found the Loch Arcaig gold all on his own, and he managed to prevent it from being stolen by a crook?
My mouth flattened. I'd heard something to that effect. Will's eyes shone.
The man is a true hero. I can't wait to see what he does next.
I gave in to temptation. Between us, I confided, lowering my voice, poor Hugo has a terrible fungal condition at the moment that's unfortunately put him out of action. It's very sad. I sighed, gesturing vaguely towards my crotch. I've seen it. It's all green and mouldy and... Otis stared at me, utterly aghast.
Deasy, stop that!
I folded my hands together. You're right, too much information. I raised my eyebrows at Will, who was looking morbidly fascinated. Anyway, back to Mud McAlpine. Why is he taking things from the cemetery?
I have no idea. He's nabbed all sorts. Flowers, solar lights, teddy bears. That's disgusting. He's preying on people's grief. I've spoken to the police several times, but I don't think they've done anything.
Don't worry. I'll have a word with Mr. McAlpine. Perhaps I can put a stop to all this business. I'd certainly try.
That would be wonderful. With you being an elf and all, he might listen to you.
Stranger things had happened. I curtsied to Will and nodded to Otis and Hester, both of whom decided to play nice and fly to perch on my shoulders.
Good work, Hester whispered as I walked away. We get to leave this godforsaken place, and you've badmouthed Hugo all at the same time. I approve.
Otis remained in a huff.
You're supposed to be his friend now. It wasn't nice to say those things about Hugo.
No, but it had been fun. I hadn't seen Hugo for 2 months, and I might never see him again. It wasn't as if he would ever know what I'd said to a random council worker in a quiet cemetery. The main thing was that I had a solid lead on who had taken Sophia's doll. I'd have Nancy back in her hands within hours. Then the real treasure hunting would definitely begin.
Chapter 3
I'd assumed that Mud was a nickname, but a 2-minute search of the electoral register revealed it was his real name. I hoped for his sake that he'd changed it by deed poll and that his parents hadn't christened him Mud. Given that Will had been right and the witch did indeed live reasonably close both to Sockton Cemetery and my home, I didn't waste any time before heading to his address, a basement flat in an old tenement building that had definitely seen better days. I picked my way along the cracked stone path, avoiding the strewn rubbish and towering waist-high weeds. A small patch of garden to my left was a messy tangle of more weeds, but dotted amongst them there were glimpses of medicinal plants. Feverfew, sweet Sicily, and even some unseasonal clary sage, which I recognised from the time my adopted mum had bought some from a witch to soothe her conjunctivitis. I suspected that this scrap of land had once been well tended by an experienced witch. Whether that was true or not, it certainly was ignored now. The main door was open, as was often the case with these tenement buildings, so I went inside, located the stairs, and headed down until I found the correct apartment door. Other than Gladys, I was on my own. It had seemed wise to persuade Otis and Hester to stay behind. I didn't want to scare Mud McAlpine off. From what little I knew of him, I reckoned a gently approach would be best. This was one of those times when hiding my elvish nature and any hint of my magic would likely reap rewards. I was nothing more than a harmless adult helping out a forlorn child. Go me. There didn't appear to be a doorbell, so I knocked quietly, arranging my face into a meek expression. It was as well I did. Even though I'd been warned by Will, Mud McAlpine's appearance was still somewhat surprising. He was tall, with broad shoulders and a wide girth, though something about the way his skin sagged suggests that he'd recently lost a lot of weight. He had a waxy pallor, and his eyes were slightly glazed and tinged with red. This was not a well man. Gladys appeared to agree with Will that Mud was strange, and I felt her blade vibrating against my hip as if she were itching to slice him open and taste his peculiar blood. I touched her hilt lightly, hoping she'd stay quiet. This was not a good time for a sentient sword to start singing.
"Who is this?"
he asked, his lank, greasy hair shivering as his head jerked from right to left with every word he uttered. I'm Daisy Carter.
Mad McAlp.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?